This episode is sponsored by Feather Snack. Okay, hold on, y'all. I have to tell you about something that my wife got us into and that my whole family is loving now. Brace yourselves. It's the Feather Snap Scout Smart Bird Feeder. Yes, I said bird feeder. This thing is so cool, and it offers a brand new way to connect with nature and learn about the birds right in your own backyard. Or, if you're like us, living in New York City, it's in your friend's backyard in the country, and you get to use the app connected to it to learn all the stuff. It's got this high-resolution camera that connects to an app, so you can check out a live stream from your feeder. You can take photos and videos of the birds that visit. You can ID the species using expert-trained AI, and you can earn badges along the way. You can even, y'all, learn fun facts about hundreds of species. For example, did you know that American crows can recognize and remember people's faces? And they can even teach their young who's a friend and who's a foe? I know that now, did you? Seriously, the Feather Snap Feeder is entertaining, it's educational, and it's just a whole bunch of fun for the whole family. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com. All right, y'all. I just want to take a quick second to talk about our sponsor, Sunbasket. I don't know if you know this about me, but I am not a big fan of grocery shopping or meal planning or anything that goes along with any of that. But I do very much care about eating healthy. But when you don't like to grocery shop or plan meals, it is really hard to cook healthy dinners for your family. And that's where Sunbasket comes in. They're a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. And you can pick and choose from recipe options like vegetarian, Mediterranean, carb conscious, the list goes on. We just had orzo bowls with broccoli, sun-dried tomatoes, and pea stew, and it was delicious. My kids even liked them. I can't speak to Sunbasket more. I love them. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitments to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very, very best. You just have to go to sunbasket.com/queerfam today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/queerfam to save $120, y'all, across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Go do that. Get some healthy food. There you go. Love is love. If you don't have to make a family, but taking a traditional
ride. If he's not say. I am a lesbian.
Black queer human being.
We are two gay dads.
I am a transgender man.
Trans woman.
Bisexual, non-binary, single parent by choice.
Can I ever have nice things? I just want nice things.
He just got spit up on.
Well, hello, 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 y'all. It's Jamie here. I'm here solo. E couldn't make it again today, but they will be in the interview that you are about to hear, so you will hear their voice. And for now, you get me. Moi. Yay. I am sitting here. It is actually the day that the president finally signed the Respect for Marriage Act. It just happened, which is awesome, which is great. So now we know that our LGBTQ plus marriages are legally protected without the possibility of takebacks. They cannot take it back, we think. At least we think, right? Like, who knows? Because there's also that 303 Creative versus Alanis First Amendment rights case where the web designer doesn't want to design for LGBTQ couples and their weddings because of, you know, religious reasons and things like that. So it just feels like the haters are always going to find the loopholes, right? They're always going to find them. But we're going to keep it real and keep the fight going. And let's just hope that the powers that be keep it real as well when it comes to our rights. Let's just hope so. And hopefully we don't have to defend our marriages anymore. Thank goodness. I mean, we still have to adopt our children that we make together and so many other loopholes we go to, which, you know, I mean, there's one even in this episode today. Before I get into our guest and our episode, I just want to say a huge and special thank you to our newest Patreon member, Melissa Feldman. Melissa, I love you. You rock. Thank you for joining Patreon. Thank you so much. We couldn't do this without you. If you want to help us keep sharing these super important LGBTQ plus family stories, you too can help us. We've got various tiers in our Patreon community starting at just $2 a month. You're going to do a good thing and you're going to get bonus content like videos of most episodes drop a day early, crazy behind the scenes shenanigans, and anything else that I can think of to post to keep you all entertained and engaged. We've got a whole community over there. So come join. It'll be fun. We're adding more things as we go. You're going to head to patreon.com/ovariestalk to join. All right, Brooke. Our guest for today is Brooke. Brooke's wife was supposed to join us, but they had a sick kid, which happens in parenting. There we go. That's parenting right there. But I learned a new term talking to Brooke, and it is also the title of this episode. It is socially infertile. That's the term. And that is what they use to basically describe folks like us, LGBTQ folks, trying to conceive in Australia. Doesn't sound great, and it's actually not great because, you know, think about socially infertile and what that might mean and how they might use that as a loophole to not help us make our babies. And you're going to hear more about it in the episode. But also, Brooke and her wife have a very, very lesbian meeting story, which is awesome. And you're going to hear that. And they get pregnant and give birth to twins during a hardcore Australian pandemic lockdown. And when we say hardcore Australian pandemic lockdown, we're not kidding. It's a great episode. I'm excited to share it with you. Helen can't wait to share it with you. Helen, once again, is being super nice. Beulah is with E, trying to help E with all the stuff that E's got going on. And Helen is here with me. Helen, darling. Helen, my fake assistant that I love so much. Can you please roll the tape? Roll the tape, Helen. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Helen. Hi, Brooke.
Hi, Brooke.
Hi.
It is such a pleasure to have you. We are so excited for this, and Brooke is so committed to doing this that Brooke got up at 5 a.m. in the morning to tell us her story, and her wife was supposed to be here. I mean, you tell us what your situation you're in right now is, because this is parenting, right?
Yeah, my wife was supposed to be here, but we do have a sick kid at the moment, which I think is just how it goes. Mm-hmm. I just want to put it out there that to any parent who is going through a child that doesn't sleep, I feel you. I feel you. Mm. Yeah.
Brooke, music to my ears. I know the struggle. I'm here for you, girl. I'm here
for
you.
Can you explain it, though? When you say don't sleep,
yeah,
is that more like, oh, it's not enough hours, or is that no sleep?
Oh, well, I mean, it changes day to day, but I should start by saying I have twins. And so my boy, Archer, sleeps 7 till 7. He is an angel baby. I don't know how we got so lucky, honestly. Like, he just sleeps all the time. And our daughter, she just doesn't need much sleep. And it just goes to show that you can do the same thing with two children at the same time, and it's not the parent. It's the child sometimes.
Brooke, I love you so much for saying this. I berated myself so much as a mother when my first was the little sleeping hellion that she was. And then we get my son, and it's a completely different story. And really, your child comes out how your child comes out. And no amount of sleep training. You could probably do a lot of stuff with sleep training, but I also want... for those parents who just can't get the sleep training to work for their kids, it's okay. Yeah. It's okay. It's not you. It's not you.
Exactly. That's the thing. You
You're
know?
Doing your fucking best.
And you know what kills me about this? Because you've talked about it before, Jay, is that people will come up to you and say, have you tried this book? Have you tried warm milk? Have you? It's like, fuckers, I've tried everything.
You don't think
I didn't have the
everything?
Sleep trials. So, but I can't imagine. I probably would have given them away.
Yeah.
Because I'm a sleeper.
You want her? You can take her. I'll fly her to America. You can have her. She's very nice.
How old?
Oh, they're 18 months.
I don't know.
It's a lot. You're in it.
You're in the thick of it.
Listen, I'm here for you. I love you. I feel you. I know how it goes. I'll tell you one thing, though. My daughter, she still fights going to bed, and it's like a whole thing. Mm. But she sleeps straight through the night. She doesn't move. She's like out. Once she's out, she's out. So we have gotten somewhere. Well, she's 8. And I would say it probably started happening around maybe 6. So hang in there, Brooke.
Yeah.
You see why I'm afraid to have any more children? Because I know if we have another child, that will be it. It's going to happen.
You never know. Yeah.
Well, you never know.
You know, yeah.
But we've already digressed, as we do. We haven't even gotten our elevator pitch in. We know a lot about you now, but let's dive right into that elevator pitch so our listeners can hear a little more about you, Brooke, and why you're here today talking to us.
All right.
He's going to do the magic.
I have the timer, but we never cut people off. We just like this timer thing because it makes people anxious, and that's our job. No. Just have fun with it. And when you start, I start.
Okay. All right. So me and my wife, Caitlin, met 7.5 years ago when we kind of did a whoopsie and fell in love because, well, she was engaged to my ex and we met through work, kind of just fell into it, whoopsie daisy, anyway. And then we decided to get pregnant in the middle of the world's harshest, toughest, longest lockdown. And ended up with twins at the end of it.
Wow.
Boom.
That was great.
That's it in a nutshell. You did good. You really nutshelled that story.
And you used one of my favorite words, whoopsie daisy. I love that word.
So let's take it back to that. So you whoopsied into love because you were with someone else.
We both were. I mean, my relationship was much shorter. And it was definitely at its end. For sure. And then my wife, Caitlin, was engaged to, I guess, like my high school sweetheart person. We dated for 2 years in high school. Look, I mean, we could do an entire podcast on our love story and how we met and everything. And
yes, do it. Because I have questions already. Were the partners of the same? Do you mind gender revealing the partners?
Oh yeah, that's a good one. So my ex and Caitlin's ex is a trans man, and so when I dated them, they were still presenting as female.
And that was in high school.
That was in high school. Yes, maybe like a year later, Caitlin and them got together, and that was at the very start of their transition. And they were together for just under 2 years, I think. And there's a lot more, but we'll keep it PG.
I mean, I'm intrigued.
Were they together and you guys met and it was like, oh, shit.
Like, how'd you meet? Was it a party? Were you like, I got to go see my high school sweetheart for this thing? Yeah, like, so what was it?
We kind of stayed in contact and there was a lot of, you know, lying on their behalf and saying that him and Caitlin weren't together anymore. And, you know, there were some hookups. There were.
Oh.
I was definitely in the wrong. He was definitely in the wrong. But I think it all changes when you meet the person and you realize, oh, their opinion of this relationship is very different than what I thought it was. Mm. As soon as I kind of figured out that things weren't all as I thought they were, I ended it with him. And then I met Caitlin through work. She started working at the same place that I worked. And I just reached out, I gave her my number, and I was like, look, let's just not talk about him. Let's, you know, just have our own friendship aside from him and try and make this working together thing as smooth as possible.
Oh, I see. They were together and you were hooking up with the ex while they were with
And so Caitlin ended up getting a job where I worked, and she didn't know what had happened. And very quickly we formed a friendship, and, you know, I kept struggling with, what do I do? Do I tell her?
Oh, yeah.
My idea was I'll just wait and see, you know, if she has any idea. Because it wasn't just me that he was cheating with. There was many, many other people. Oh. And she did know. And she says now that she kind of had an idea that he was cheating with me as well. Anyway, so the friendship turned romantic very quickly.
As you do.
And it was clear, like, we couldn't not be together. So I told her, and she texted him and said, "Did you have fun fucking your ex? We're done." And then we got up and had to go to work. She stood up, walked towards the exit, turned around and kissed me.
Oh, my God.
I love all of this.
It's a movie.
It's a real movie. But it's also real life. And I think that hearing this is important for our listeners to know that life is more like this than it's not. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's more the norm than not the norm.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish my life was this exciting. I don't know if my life is this exciting.
It wasn't very fun for the first, like, you know, 18 months. It caused a lot of drama, you know.
Sure,
Because me and the ex went to school together, you know, and we weren't long out of high school, there was a lot of backlash from people. But hey, we showed them 7.5 years later. We're still together. We're married. We're twins.
That's right.
You know,
look at you.
If I had to be in that relationship with him for 2 years and Caitlin had to be in that relationship with him for 2 years to find each other, well, it was worth it. It was worth it.
Absolutely. Look at that. Look at that. I love it. So you found your true love through the ex, as you do.
Yes.
What comes next?
Well, first we U-hauled. Hard.
As you do.
In about 2 weeks. Because she was living with the ex.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. So we U-hauled hard.
Yeah.
We got a lot of cats.
You are really just checking all the boxes here. Yeah. It's just, we are really just going down the list.
Yeah. And it's a bit of a, we had a greyhound as well. She just died recently.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, the loss of a pet really sucks. It's real hard.
It's the worst. It's really, it gets you.
That's also kind of a lesbian stereotype in Australia.
That's another box we just checked.
Yeah,
okay.
Of course. but yeah, and then, so we got married, we got engaged just before we were together for a year. And basically, I would say straight away, the baby conversation started. My mum was a teen mum. She had me at 16. So to me, that was normal. Having a baby young was normal. She then went on to have my brother and sister later in her, I think, about 30, 32. And I saw that it was harder on her then. And I didn't want to wait. It was always kind of known that it wasn't going to be Caitlin. She didn't care about genetics. Neither of us did. She doesn't have the best genetic background, I guess.
Like medically.
Yeah.
So, stuff, right.
Yeah, it just was like, well, we'll just use my eggs. It'll be me and all good. And, yeah, then came the discussion.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's such an easy decision, right, for who's going to carry and who's not. And sometimes it's really difficult.
So easy.
I got to say, I love that you did it, that you decided you wanted to be young. Because if I could rewind time and there was all this ability, I probably would have, because our bodies are more ready for it at younger ages. You know what I mean? Like, we're in our peaks between, 15 and 22. So,
yeah,
I think that's great.
I mean,
because by the time you're my age, you're going to be like, the kids will be grown out of university. You'll have a whole life and be able to be fabulous around the world. And you'll be looking at people like me with a 10-year-old, fuck, and be like, what? Oh, he's 11. And be like, oh, gosh, I'm happy I'm done with that.
Yeah. Well, but let's just not advocate 15-year-olds having babies.
I don't think we want I'm not advocating for that. I'm just saying the bodies. Our bodies match our societal pressures.
Let's wait till we're out of the teen years. What? And on that note, E, I don't think I would have been a good mom as a young mom. I think for me, like, I needed to wait this long. I think it would be, a lot of things might be easier if I had done it younger. I wouldn't be as tired all the time, but I don't think I would have been as good of a mom.
I
personally
agree. Yeah, I agree.
Personally.
It just would have been done.
Yeah, there's that. Yeah.
We were planning earlier. I think I was 27 when I got pregnant and had them. So not super young, but we did start the planning process. 23, I think, was when we really started thinking about it. And if we had have been there financially, we definitely would have tried earlier. I guess when we were starting the conversation younger, we did explore all the avenues. So I know you've had Adam on the podcast from the Facebook group, Sperm Donor Australia.
Yes.
Yeah. So we joined that group. We looked at donors. We considered all of our options.
Just for listeners at home who may not have listened to that episode, this is a Facebook group where sperm donors go join up and folks who want to buy sperm join, and you kind of make matches in Facebook, and it's not through a bank and therefore sometimes many times free.
Yes, completely free.
Right. So that's what this Facebook group is. So you looked at that.
Yeah, we looked at that mainly. Well, I mean, partly because of the financial aspect, you know, we could try as many times as we wanted. There was no financial loss. But also I did like the idea of, depending on the person, having more information about them, because the information we get in Australia is very limited, which we'll get to.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
But, yeah, we just thought, you know, I'd seen other people, I guess, on social media in Australia or in New Zealand that had found a donor online and now have a great relationship with them, and their kid sees them, you know, a couple of times a year. They're involved in, you know, their cultural journey and all that type of stuff. And we just thought, let's just explore it and just see. We didn't really have even any queer friends. So it was kind of just, we didn't have anyone to talk to about it. So we had a look, and we did find a donor that we really liked, that we really clicked with, but we had some debt to pay off. We wanted to have some money saved for when we had a baby.
Mm-hmm.
So that was going to take us a while. So we kind of waited, and eventually we decided that we were going to get married first. Same-sex marriage came legal in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided we'd get married, go on a honeymoon, and then really knuckle down with the finances. We were under the impression that I would need to do IVF rather than just IUI. So we really were kind of gearing up for a more expensive journey. And, you know, I think being in this world, people around you, the people that you follow on social media, are going through IVF. And, you know, not all the people I followed were queer, so they had fertility problems. And so everything I was seeing around me were people struggling, people, you know, doing multiple rounds and, you know, multiple attempts and having losses. And not all of the journeys were really, really hard, but it was this idea that it's not easy. I mean, they always say, you're going to have sex, you're going to get pregnant. Well, it's not that easy.
Right.
It takes a lot more than that, especially for us.
Right. And we know off the bat, it's going to take a little bit more. And so, like, I just want to say, like I say all the time, the fucking intentionality we put into these families. You started talking about this at 22.
I love it.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, let's think about this. All the decisions you had to make before you even got to the point where you're trying is a lot more than your average non-queer. Let's just be real. And I'm just throwing that down. Okay, so get rid of the debt. You're ready to start. And what do you do?
Yeah, so we did reach out when we were going through the debt paying off process to the original donor that we had found through the Facebook group. It'd been a couple of years. We checked in with him and he said he was no longer donating.
Mm.
And he did in the end say he would donate to us, considering we'd been talking for so long, you know, he liked us. But he did have some sperm issues.
Mm.
I don't remember exactly what it was. It wasn't anything that, you know, if he wasn't getting regular sperm analysis, he would never have known, I would say.
Right.
So it wasn't something that meant we wouldn't go with him, but he was older, the sperm issues, you know, I work in the legal area. And so for me, it was like, is it worth it? You know, I did trust him.
Right.
But I mean, you never know what's going
to
happen.
You never know. And if you're in the legal area, you know, you need to just get things signed. Right. And
figure,
and that's a whole extra can of worms to add to all of the can of worms that we have to think about and work through with this family building journey. Like, that's a whole nother thing that takes time and effort.
We knew we didn't want to pick another donor from the group. We didn't want to go through that process again. We didn't think that we would find someone that we liked as much as the donor we had. Mm-hmm. And so when we found out there was potentially some issues with his sperm, we just thought maybe that's a sign. Let's just do, you know, the traditional, I guess, lesbian way and go to the clinic and do it that way. So the very, very start of 2020, before COVID ruined the world, we went and had our first appointment at a clinic. Mm-hmm. And we saw our doctor, and to be honest, we hated her. Absolutely hated her. She didn't have any bedside manner, you know, and I'm saying this because now I love her. But, you know, she didn't have any bedside manner. She was very cold. But she also just didn't have a positive outlook. So I should mention, in Australia, we have Medicare, which honestly I don't really know how to explain it to someone with
our kind of crazy fucked up insurance. Healthcare. Yeah.
Yes. I don't know how the best way to explain it is, but I guess it's kind of like government insurance. So not everything's covered by Medicare, but you don't get the full amount back. You don't pay for it. It's completely free. Everyone gets Medicare that is an Australian citizen, or maybe an Australian permanent resident, but everyone gets Medicare. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people choose to have private insurance on top of that. Uh-huh. And so for things that they don't cover, like they don't cover the dentist. Uh-huh. For us, it was, we were socially infertile and not medically infertile. And so the cover that we got from Medicare was not that great. It was still something. Hmm. So basically,
in a nutshell, you're gay. You're not necessarily infertile. You're just gay. So we're not going to cover you. Yes. Like somebody who's actually infertile and straight and trying to get pregnant. Wow. Basically, in a nutshell, yes. Is that safe to say?
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Oh, my God.
So...
you socially infertile. That's a nice way of
that's
being.
That's literally the word that they use as well. Like in all of the paperwork, it's socially infertile.
That's a nice way of being homophobic, yeah. I feel like.
I know.
It's socially infertile. What is that? I mean, thinking of it, it's like, what? I went out into a party and I didn't get pregnant? Like, what do they mean? I know what they mean literally, but it means
your lifestyle does not produce babies the natural way. Your lifestyle is not natural.
I mean,
that's what that means. Yeah.
You're not surrounding yourself with enough men.
Right. So there's that. Okay. So what'd you do? How'd you get around this? What do you have to do?
Yeah. So to prove that you're medically infertile, you need to do two IUIs. And some of it we did get a rebate for. So a lot of people will do two IUIs just to get the rebate for IVF. Because you can then move on to IVF and get it. I think it takes it from about 13,000 to about 7 or 8, depending on your clinic and the medications that's used, because you do get money back on medications.
Okay.
And like blood tests and ultrasounds and stuff like that, mm-hmm. you get money off. So a lot of people do the two IUIs. You can be classed as medically infertile if you have certain reproductive problems, mm-hmm. like endometriosis, polycystic ovaries, all of those types of things. Now, I have suspected endometriosis, but I haven't had the surgery to confirm it.
Right. And that's most people, it's just suspected, because that surgery is like a whole thing. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. I have suspected endometriosis as well, but I'm not doing the surgery right now. So
no,
I'm just going to live in pain, basically. That's cool.
Yeah. Me too. And so the doctor, she didn't even recommend doing the surgery either. That's the thing. Like if she had recommended it, then maybe we would have done it. But she didn't recommend doing it, especially not close to trying to have a baby, mm-hmm. which I have heard conflicting things about to say that. But, yeah, so it was really kind of hard. She said, oh, you know, you've probably got like a 4% chance of getting pregnant from IUI. I don't know where she pulled this number from. So we left that appointment feeling very deflated. Mm-hmm. Deflated? Mm-hmm. Defeated.
Deflated, defeated.
Deflated, yeah. And so it was hard. It was definitely hard to figure out what was going to happen, but we didn't have to think about it for long because then COVID happened.
Shut down.
And I don't know how much your listeners know about what happened in Australia.
Tell
especially
us.
Melbourne, where I'm from.
Tell us.
For us, it was if you're outside of your home, you have to wear a mask. And if you're not wearing a mask, you will be fined. And they followed through with those fines. There was a lot of protests. The only real thing that was open were places that sell food. Mm-hmm. were open, like supermarkets and for takeaway from cafes and medical places.
But I'm assuming IVF, IUI shut down. No baby making.
So it wasn't shut down. You'd only do it if you had already started your treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Their thing was that they were wanting to free up hospital space mm-hmm. because, you know, I guess for IVF, some places worked out of like public hospitals because we do actually have publicly funded IVF clinics,
mm-hmm.
but only for the straight people.
Of course, of course.
So they don't have, yeah, of course, why? So they don't have a donor program is what they say, but they also then won't let you go with a known donor. So I have friends who have a known donor and they couldn't even access it.
Wow.
They couldn't go to this public clinic.
Yeah.
To make their child with yeah. the known donor. So lockdown happens, shit is shut down. How do you all move through it and how do you move forward with it and get to where you're at?
Yeah.
Your baby, well, I'm doing the math in my head as we're talking. I'm like, your babies are 18 months.
But also, we don't know how long it took them to get pregnant once they started too. Yeah.
They were conceived in September, the start of September of 2020. So we were still in lockdown when we were going through it. They did lift the IVF ban. So we started, I don't know exactly, maybe July, June, July, the process. So we needed to do two counselling sessions. After our first counselling session, we could then pick our donor. So we got a list from our clinic. It was not very long. We do have a donor shortage in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Our donors don't get paid.
Right.
So let me get it clear. They brought you a list and said, here you go. Choose from these predetermined.
Like with height and eye color and.
Yeah. So you've got a very small amount of information. So
no picture.
You know, it has their donor number. No picture at all.
Wow.
I know, which I'm actually so grateful for. I don't want to see a photo of him. I don't want to look at my son, who I'm sure looks, you know, very, very close to the donor. I don't want to look at him and be like, oh, you've got his eyes.
Right.
I want to look at him and see the things that look, you know, close to me. I mean, he looks very much like I do now, but my daughter is a splitting image of what I looked like when I was a baby,
right.
You know, just exactly the same.
Yeah, for me. I needed the pictures.
Have you looked at them again, you know? Though? That's my question, because I haven't looked at my picture in 10 years.
Yeah, I just saw him as an adult recently. So there's that. But that's a whole nother story. That's a whole nother story for another time.
Ooh.
That's a whole nother story. And we'll talk about that soon. But you get a list.
Yeah, we got eye color, hair color, height, nationality, ethnicity. And then what you do is you kind of rank them. You pick your top three. I should say that there were really only three white donors.
Okay.
And so we just chuck all three of them on our list. You then submit that to them and they then evaluate, you know, which, I don't want to say which is the best fit because it's not really what the best fit is. It's,
oh my God.
If you're doing IUI, I knew that would be your reaction. If you're doing IUI, it is fair to say that you would use more vials of sperm than someone doing IVF. Because when you're doing a round of IVF, they take that one vial of sperm and they fertilize all of the eggs.
Right.
And you might only need one round of IVF to get all of your eggs. Mm-hmm. But with IUI, every single time they're using an entire vial. So
or
they're
two.
Not going to give
well,
you,
in my clinic, they use two per IUI. But
yeah, so they're not going to give you the donor that has, say, the least amount of vials if you're intending on doing IUI. So they do kind of separate the donors into IUI donors and IVF donors. Now, you can use IUI donors for IVF, but you can't really use the IVF donors for IUI.
Okay.
Because we have a shortage and there's a limit. Mm-hmm. So one donor can only give sperm to 9 different families. And I should add, they still count. So say if my wife wanted to carry a child, even if it was my egg, I believe, she counts as a separate family.
Oh. Huh.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's a separate,
separate
genetics. If she used her own egg, it would be separate own genetics.
Okay.
Even if they are raised in one family, it doesn't count.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So they are wanting to change that, though. Uh-huh. They are in the process of changing that, I believe.
To make it a little more inclusive of us queers.
Yeah.
So you choose 3, and then they decide.
It's very rare that you don't get your top pick.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure it happens. But we did get the donor that we wanted, and then what they do is they then give you an expanded profile on your donor, which is... Why do you want... They don't have to fill this out. So I think one of our donor picks didn't fill it out. And that's fine. He didn't want to do that. One of them filled it out but gave very little information. And then the donor that we picked filled it out and gave a lot of information. Some really good answers as to why he wanted to donate, what his hobbies were and his interests were. And that's the donor that we ended up picking. But, they can't give you too much information. Like it gives you their occupation, but they're not going to tell you, how good they were in school or whether or not they still live in this state or not.
Right. So
I got his GPA. I know his GPA.
Oh, my gosh. I do. Yeah. That's crazy.
Like that.
So how many IUI rounds did you have before ding, ding, ding?
Yeah, so we did our first IUI and we had 2 eggs release and we had a chemical pregnancy for that one.
Mm, that's hard.
Which we didn't even really know about because they weren't great at explaining that that's what it was. Mm. I mean, because we used a trigger shot, we thought that the very faint positive we were getting later on was the trigger shot.
Right.
And then it wasn't until we had our catch up with our doctor that we discovered, you were actually pregnant. It was just a chemical pregnancy.
Mm.
Oh, and I should add, one of the COVID rules we had was, so we had to get a letter from our doctor saying that we were in treatment and allowed to travel. We had to stick to the curfew. So there was one time where we then had to get a letter from our clinic stating that we could be outside of curfew to have our trigger shot administered.
Wow.
And we had to carry that on us. And Caitlin wasn't allowed in the room for the first IUI.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then the doctor basically was like, oh, you're definitely going to get pregnant. So I'm going to break the rules and let Caitlin come in.
Oh, after the chemical pregnancy, you mean?
Yes, for our second IUI.
Okay, so
she was so bright side, positive.
I don't know.
Yeah, definitely.
Ugh.
I definitely think so. But it was crazy. She went from, oh, you've got a 4% chance of getting pregnant to, oh, no, you're definitely getting pregnant on this IUI. 100%, I know you are. So we're going to break the rules, the law, and allow your wife to be in.
Yeah, that doctor's starting to look a little better now.
Exactly. And she definitely, she did improve, definitely. But yeah, that was the IUI that stuck. So we went in.
Oh, because Caitlin was there.
Yeah.
I know, exactly. So she had said that we had one mature egg and one egg that was not as mature. And she came in and she's, doing her thing, put it in, push the sperm in. And as, I kid you not, as she pushes it, she says, okay, so just don't get pregnant with twins. And then takes it out and walks off.
Okay, like a half control. Okay.
I swear you just jinxed me or something. Yeah. You jinxed me. I kid you not, you jinxed me. Anyway, so that happened very early. We got a positive. It was like 9 days later.
Wow.
Very early. Yeah, those babies were not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And I still remember telling Caitlin, I went in. We did then sleep in separate beds. And I went in, I woke her up. It was 7 o'clock on like a Saturday or a Sunday.
Wait, you and Caitlin slept in different beds?
Yeah, yeah. We did up until about a month ago.
Really?
Yeah. My wife snores and okay. I'm a light sleeper. And
I am with you. Can I tell you, Brooke, my wife and I have made decisions that sometimes you got to sleep away. Like somebody has to leave the room because, you know, we may have a king size bed, but I sleep like this. And sometimes she doesn't want to push and she moves and tosses and turns. I love that you guys have two separate beds and you just now are shifting.
Yeah. Yes. So we did have to co-sleep with our daughter for a while, but about a month ago, we let her sleep by herself. And now me and Caitlin, well, I shouldn't say we do sleep in the same bed because 9 times out of 10, one of us does have to go and sleep with Edie, which is fine. But we try and start in the same bed and hopefully eventually soon we will wake up in the same bed together. And it is really nice. I think especially having kids, my wife doesn't snore as much now. I don't think that's related, but she doesn't snore as much now. And I'm not as much of a light sleeper as I was. So that's definitely a positive. But yes, we were sleeping in separate beds. I went in 7 a.m. My wife likes to sleep in. I've been up since 5 a.m. and I've opened the blind. I shoved the test in her face. I said, look, can you see it? Can you see it? And she's like, yeah, I can. I was like, okay, the trigger shot's gone now. She's like, yeah, yeah. I'm like, okay, does that mean I'm pregnant? She's like, yeah. I was like, okay. I went back to bed and she went back to sleep.
There you go, as you do.
Wow.
As
you do. Wow. How was your pregnancy?
Yeah.
So how'd it go?
Oh, God. So I had, at about 5.5 weeks, I was cramping really bad, in a lot of pain. I went to the hospital. They did an ultrasound. And I swear the doctor thought there were like 4 babies in there or something. Oh. Because she put the thing in and she looked at the screen. And even I, for a second, was like, oh, what is that? Turns out they were fibroids, which I had throughout my pregnancy, which was fine. But one of the babies was hiding behind a fibroid. Mm. And the other baby she couldn't find. So we were convinced, okay, it's just one. It's just one. That's great. Well, we went for our first, like, dating scan. And in the car on the way there, we were talking. We're like, oh, you know, do you think it's one? Do you think it's two? And I'm like, I went against my gut. And I was like, nah, it's one. It's one. Just one. And we got out of the car, walked across the road, went into the foyer, and something in my body just said, stop, stop. So I stopped and I looked at Caitlin and I was like, let's take a before we find out it's twins photo. And she looked at me, she's like, okay, all right. And we took a before we find out it's twins photo. We went up for our ultrasound. I laid down, put the probe in. I couldn't see the screen, but Caitlin could. And she's looking, she's like, okay, so there's two. I'm like, what?
I love the nonchalance.
I couldn't tell you. I'm like, two what?
The nonchalance is awesome. I'm like, oh, it's two. Wow. Yeah.
It was terrifying. And I was like, what do you mean? And she's like, oh, I should start by saying it's a twin pregnancy. And I'm like, twins? You said it wasn't going to be twins. You said that only one egg was mature. What are you talking about? It was very interesting finding out. And, yeah, I mean, I was very sick, mm-hmm. very sick. I was on all of the medication. I wasn't working because we were still in lockdown. I didn't end up going back to work until I was about 11 weeks mm-hmm. pregnant. And, oh, I was showing. I was so pregnant, so pregnant. And I had to tell everyone because I was like, oh, my gosh, I'm so pregnant. I couldn't hide that. There was no hiding that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, I was so sick until about 24 weeks.
Me too. I was too.
It's awful.
So let's talk about the birth. So you get through, then you give birth to twins.
Yeah, well, which is a story within itself because my waters broke. It was funny. My waters broke and I said to Caitlin, I was like, I don't think I peed myself. And then I ran away and jumped in the shower and she came running after me. And she's like, what do you mean you don't think you peed yourself? What do you mean? What's going on?
Yeah.
She very quickly cottoned on and then she panicked hardcore. But yeah, it ended up being an emergency C-section. I was going to have a C-section anyway because my son was breech. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was an emergency C-section and my daughter was not doing as well as my son. So they both ended up going to NICU. And my son was in the NICU special care unit for 11 days, just really to learn to suck. They were early. They were born at 35 and 4. So early, but they were a good size still. They were 6 pounds 6 and 6 pounds 2.
That's bigger than my
That's
son
huge
was.
For twins. Yeah.
I know. Yeah. I know. So you can imagine how big that I was. And going back to the fibroids, one of my fibroids ended up getting to the size of, like, I think it was 7 or 8 centimeters.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Wow.
I know.
You had a lot in there.
You had a lot going
fill,
on.
Yeah. Fill it up. And your daughter, what happened with your daughter?
Yeah, so she went on a machine called CPAP to help with her breathing. Mm-hmm. And she was on that and then got worse. She went then on to a ventilator. Which was so heartbreaking to see. Like, I couldn't even look at her. I still remember in the NICU, like, we walked in and I knew that my son was at the end of the corridor and I knew he was fine. There was nothing wrong with him. He was perfect. And my daughter was perfect, but, you know, there were things wrong with her.
Right.
And, you know, I knew that if I just stood there for a second, my daughter was down the corridor on my left and I stood there before I got to the corridor, just before it, and I listened. I just stopped and I just listened. I was like, okay, is there a code going on?
Oh.
Is there a code blue? Can I hear? Because I knew what her nurse, she had the same nurse for 2 days. So I knew what her nurse sounded like. I was like, is her nurse there? Because she had a nurse with her by herself 24/7 for the first couple of days. And so I'm like, okay, all right. And I had to like push myself to look down the corridor. So I looked down the corridor. I was like, okay, is she still in the room? Is she still there?
Oh my God.
And I saw her little incubator was there and I was like, okay, all right, I'm going to go down there. Oof. So I walk down there and I look at her and I'm like, okay. And I just say to the nurse, I'm like, is she okay? And they're like, yeah, you know, she's okay. Nothing's changed.
Mm.
And that was every single day for the first 5 days. And every time I went down there too, it wasn't just the first time. It was like every time I went to go to her room, I was just holding my breath, being like, okay, is she okay? Is she going to make it? And, you know, she did. She was a fighter. I mean, day three, we walked into the NICU and the nurse turned to us and was like, yeah, she's got a strong personality. The baby's sedated.
Yeah.
Like, she's sedated and she's got a strong personality.
And
it's been the same.
Yeah, and now look where she's at. Yeah. She's giving you trouble sleeping, but you know what? Strong personality as a baby is going to be great as an adult.
Absolutely.
It's going to give you hell until then.
Absolutely.
So you have your baby.
And she is the best. I know.
Congratulations.
She was in there for 2 weeks. So, yeah.
I love it. Do you think that you all will have more?
Yes.
Yay. More babies.
Oh, I would have had another one about, I'd say, 6 months ago. I'm glad I didn't.
Mm.
I'm glad I didn't.
Because it gets hard. Like,
but, yeah, they're full on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, my wife would be happy to not have another one. It's not that she's dead set against it. I think she's just like, I've got my two. I'm good.
Mm.
I mean, going into planning to have a family, I was like, you know, I'd like 4.
Oh.
Now I'm like, I'd like 3. 3 is good. 3 is a good number.
Yeah.
And she was always like, oh, I'll have 2. I'm like, 2? I don't want 2. That's not enough babies.
Well, you have time. And that's the beauty of starting early. You have so much time to figure it out. But I'm so glad you told this story. And I think we've learned so much.
Yeah.
You know, different countries,
different rules. Yeah. And I hope you'll come back when baby number 3 is prepped and ready. Next time we have to have your wife with you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. She was so disappointed she couldn't come, but
well,
these babies, they keep you on your toes.
Absolutely.
We're glad we had you, and thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing your beautiful story. Ah, Brooke. So good. So good. I love the story. Brooke really went through it to make those babies, didn't she? And I'm just glad it all turned out okay after all the stuff. They got those babies after a lot of planning and a lot of work. Talk about intentionality. We are intentional AF. And I'm so happy that we got to share that episode with you. Listen, speaking of intentional AF, we have some new If These Ovaries Could Talk merchandise. And if you love this show and you want to represent your love for our beautiful, beautiful families, you're going to need to head to our shop and get some of our merchandise. We have, okay, so the new designs. We have a design that says intentional AF, as the kids say, intentional AF, because that's what our families are. We also have another design that says the future is queer, because obviously it is. The future is freaking queer. And as you know, I think everybody's a little bit queer. They just have to find it within themselves. Let's be real. And then we also have a new design, one of my favorites, and it comes from something Rosie O'Donnell said in the interview we had with Rosie. It's butt with gay, dot, dot, dot. One of my new favorite sayings. We're going into the holidays, butt with gay. Everything is butt with gay. So go over to our merchandise store. So many designs. You can put them on anything in the store. T-shirts, mugs, notebooks, face masks, laptop cases. You're just going to go to tpublic.com and search for If These Ovaries Could Talk, or go to our link in bio in our Instagram, or just go to our website and find our merchandise page. You can find it so many ways. So many ways. Represent. Yo, represent. Okay, also, don't forget, please join us on Patreon. The end of season 10 is happening, and we're going to take a little tiny hiatus before we start season 11, but we will be active on Patreon, and we will be active on our social media. So if you want to join Patreon, you're going to head to patreon.com/ovariestalk, and that's where you're going to get bonus content, and you're going to see moi and others talking, doing the stuff. And you're also going to find us on social. We are Ovaries Talk on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and YouTube. Find us in all the places. And just know, I'm super happy you all tune in and that you keep joining us through all of this. We have one more episode coming at you next week before our break, so be sure to tune into that. I'm just excited for what's in store. Season 11 is on its way, and big changes are happening, folks. Big freaking changes. A huge thank you to all of you Patreons who are helping us make this show. Please go join Patreon if you can. And without further ado, it is time for me to say eggs, ovaries, out. Da, 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 da. If these ovaries could talk, they would say
eggs, ovaries, out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.